morning. How's everybody doing? You doing okay? Yeah, yeah. There you are. You're not missing that hour of sleep at all, are you? Not at all. You know how many people I asked today because all our clocks auto-reset? If you missed the hour, they're like, oh, was that last night? That's not me. I felt it. Like, I'm even say I felt it, right? The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, right? All right. But you're going to press in today, right? You're going to press in today and receive everything God's got for you. That's good. If you haven't scanned the QR code yet, please do that now. See the top three things happening. There's a big one happening in a few minutes that I want to tell you about. It's called our Get Involved Lunch. And so some of you have already signed up for that. And our pastors and several of our leaders will be there. We'd love to just meet you and share a little bit about our church with you, have a good meal with you. And so if you signed up, you just go out the back doors and go around that way to our cafe that's on this side. We'll be ready to greet you. If you didn't sign up, but you say, oh, I wish I would have signed up. I'd love to meet the pastors of the church, love to know a little bit more about how to get involved. Just show up. We're ready for you. Come on, we want to get to know you and make you feel at home. So love to meet you after church. And then in 4 weeks is Easter, if you can even believe it. We have invite cards that are in the foyer. On your way out, the columns right by the main exit of front doors, there you'll see a bunch of these. Grab some of these. Invite your friends. Invite those you work with, those you go to school with. Invite your family. There's a QR code on the card, and it'll take you to the link that'll tell you about all things Easter at Kingwood. Also, if you scan the QR code on the screen, it will take you to our Easter landing page, and you can see everything there. So get ready. We're going to have a great Easter, and I know that the Lord is going to change a lot of people's lives. So we're starting a new series today called The Grace-Driven Life. And as we get started, I want to ask you to do something that sometimes I ask you to do. I'm going to give you a lot of good thoughts today, and if one of them sticks out to you, some of them sticks out to you, I would love for you to write it down, because there's no way that you're going to be able to remember everything I'm going to share with you, but what I'm going to share with you is profound truth that'll transform you if you can assimilate it into your life. And so this series is called The Grace-Driven Life. But I think that we often misunderstand what grace is. So it reminds me, a few years ago, I was with my younger son out in Texas. We were college hopping. We were going, checking out different colleges to see where he might go to school. And we had this meeting at one of the colleges, and we were running a little late. We didn't have breakfast. We thought the hotel had breakfast. They didn't. So we jumped into a McDonald's on our way, and we walk in. And you ever go into a new environment and things are a little off? Anybody know what I'm talking about? You're like, this just doesn't hit. Something's off in here. I don't know what it is. This just doesn't hit me right somehow. And we're in a hurry. And we're like, yeah, all right. And so we're standing up at the counter. And the guy that's working behind the counter, he's kind of a frumpy guy. He's sitting there. He doesn't look like he's really, you know, doesn't know he's at work necessarily. You know, he's just kind of hanging out. We're like, hey, guy, you know, hey, can we order? You know, we're trying to get something going here. And I'm telling the guy my order, but he can't hear me. And he can't hear me because they have the music turned up so loud in this McDonald's. And I'm like, this is so bizarre. Why would you have this music so loud? People can't even order. And so I'm trying to order. I'm like, you know, the oatmeal with the fruit thing. Like, guy, we got to go. Come on. And he's like, what? Can you repeat that? And I'm like, oh, my goodness. What's going on? And what's worse than that is, of all things, the music is like, it's classical. It's like Mozart and Beethoven. And I'm like, where are we? We're in McDonald's. I can't get my brain around what's happening. And I'm ordering, and my son's ordering. He's going, hon, can you repeat that? And he's leaned across the counter. He's looking at us like, this is so weird. I don't know what's going on. And so I go, whatever. I can't figure it. And then we go to find a seat, and we're walking to the seat. And then the person, like, on our way is just in a seat, a customer just looking at us. I'm like, this is weird. Like, I don't know if we should really stay here. Like, something, this is an out of body. You know, we've kind of pulled off into another dimension or something. I don't know where we are. And so we sit down in our seat, and the music is still so loud. And I'm thinking, you know, this has to be the best sound system I've ever heard, because I'm looking at the ceiling and I'm going, where are the speakers? It's like they're directly above me all the time. And like, you walk from one speaker to another, they have perfect coverage. Whatever they have, I'm getting this in my house. This is crazy. And it's just loud. And so we're sitting there waking, and I'm like, well, let me check the email to make sure I got the details right. So I pull my phone out of my pocket, and in ways that I cannot explain, my Spotify app is open. And I have no idea how to explain this because I never listen to classical music. It's on some classical channel. And it is blaring. I mean, just cooking hot. They're like, ah, you know, it's like this. And I kind of shut it off, and I'm like, oh, I'm the problem. And so then what I have to do is I have to walk back through all of those scenarios again and thinking, oh, when I was thinking this about the guy and this about, they were thinking, why is that idiot walking through McDonald's with Spotify turned up so loud? That's called a misunderstanding. Now, I was making decisions and forming opinions and projecting things all over that McDonald's based on something that wasn't even true. And I think that happens to us with grace. I think that we misunderstand, all of us, it's in some degree or another, misunderstand exactly what grace is. So when you and I become Christians, here's what happens to us. We are raised in the environment of the world. We are raised in the, we are formed and shaped in the environment of our home, of the world, of the philosophies of the world. And so we are raised in a works-driven environment. But when you are born again, you pass from death to life spiritually. You move from a works environment to a grace environment. And that is a big transition. I equate it to, like, if you've ever moved from one house to another, you know, you pack up everything, you know where it all belonged there, but you go to a new house, you're like, I don't know where to put this, and I don't know where's the salt and pepper, and what drawer's the spatula in, and which bathroom are we going to use? You know, you have to completely reorient your entire life. That's what happens to us when we become believers. We have to reorient our entire lives around grace because our lives have been oriented around the wrong thing, and oftentimes it's works. Now, what do I mean by a works environment? Well, let's just take a little test. Since we lost an hour of sleep, let's do a little test, okay? Let me give you some phrases and see if you can fill in the blank. And these are sort of the philosophies that shape our world, okay? Here's the first one. You get what you deserve. Yeah, I didn't know if you were going to get that, but I'm proud of you. You know what? You did good. Here's the next one. There are no free... Okay, we're going to have to start over. There are no free lunches. Some of you got it. Do unto others before they. Yeah, see, right? That's a twist on scripture. People want something for. You scratch my back and I will. Yes, not during church though. Give others what they deserve and not one penny. No pain, no. God helps those who help. Correct. You passed the test. However, none of that's in the Bible. That is how our world works. That is not how the kingdom of God works. The kingdom of God and God Himself calls us to be grace-driven people, not works-driven people. So how? How does that occur? Well, you would think just getting saved would fix it, but it doesn't. Just like when the children of Israel were freed from slavery, it took years for them to learn how to live not as slaves, but as sons and daughters. They were free. Pharaoh was gone. The army had been drowned in the water. They were free to live on their own and form a new society and a new city and a new nation and all of that. The problem is that slavery was still in their soul. And that's what you and I have to do, is we have to learn how to reorient. Now, how does that happen? Does that happen because maybe we can pray for you, or you can pray and you'll have an encounter with God and you'll transition from a works-oriented to a grace-oriented person like that? That's not how it happens. You don't get a grace-driven life. You grow a grace-driven life. 2 Peter 3 says this, but grow in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So here's the good news I have for you today. No matter where you are, you can grow in grace. It doesn't matter if you're a brand new believer or you've been walking with God for years, you can grow in grace. Now, I want to answer the question this morning as we start this series, what is grace? And I want to look at a familiar story that most of us have at least heard of the story. Whether you know the story or not, you've at least heard of the story, and it's the story of the prodigal son. Now, the story of the prodigal son is a parable, and about a third of Jesus' teachings were parables. Now, here's what a parable is. A parable is a fictional story that sounds true. It could be true, but they're generally not true, not that we know of. But they are shared to impart spiritual truth. So that's the reason that Jesus taught in parables. Now, in this particular situation, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, they were mad at Jesus, and they were complaining about Jesus because he was spending too much time with outsiders. He was spending too much time with sinners. He was spending too much time with people they didn't approve of. So rather than Jesus saying to them, you misunderstand what grace is, Jesus told this parable. And in this parable, we will see three revelations of what grace is. But the story went something like this. There was a father who had two sons. The younger son was anxious to, you know, kick the dust of the family farm off his shoes and get out and see the world. So even before his father died, which was not customary at all, he asked his father for his full inheritance. He got the inheritance. He went out as far away from as he could get from home, and he blew it. He literally just blew everything on every sin he could think of doing. He couldn't have done worse with more. And so the problem is he ran out of money, and he hit rock bottom. And he didn't have enough to eat, and he was broken, and he was sad, and he was empty. And so he decided, you know what? I have nowhere else to turn but back home. So I'm going to go back home, and he's rehearsing his speech as he's on his way home, and he's saying, I'm going to ask my dad. I don't deserve to be a son, and I know I don't after all that I've done. But when I come home, will you at least put me on payroll? Will you at least pay me to be a day laborer so that I can at least get something to eat and I can come back home? Now, as the son is on his way back home, he's halfway down the road toward the house. The dad sees him, jumps off the porch, runs out, embraces him, brings him in the house, puts him in his favorite chair. He puts a robe on his back, a ring on his finger. He brings the fatted calf. He has this big giant party. There's music and celebration because he said, this son of mine who I thought was dead is alive. And he celebrates. Well, the older brother was working out in the field all day, and as he was coming toward the house that evening, he heard the music and the commotion. He didn't know what was going on. He walks inside. He takes one look at the younger brother, and he sees how he's being celebrated, and it literally sends him into a rage. And he walks out of the house, and he's out in the yard, and he refuses to come back inside. So the father sees all of this, and he goes out to talk to his older son. And that's where we pick up the story. What's that conversation like? In that conversation, we were going to see some revelations of grace. Luke 15:29, but he answered his father, the older son. Here come the complaints. Look, exclamation point. All these years, I've been slaving for you. He's mad. Oh, he's mad. This is unjust, and he wants his dad to know. So here's the first truth we see about grace. Grace is bigger than your best effort. Grace is bigger than your best effort. See, the older brother thought that the way to earn God's favor was to serve, was to work for it, was to sacrifice for it. And you can always tell when you have this attitude or when someone else does, because the sentences usually start with something like this. I've served God all my life. I've been part of this church for 20 years. And after all I've done, you would think, right? That's how the sentences start. And you can fill in the blanks with anything you want to, because here's what it equates to. God or this church or this person owes me something. When you hear that in yourself, when you hear it in your thoughts, when you hear it from someone else, you automatically know that you're dealing with a works-based theology, not a grace-based theology. Now, we've all had those feelings, right? Right? We've all had those feelings. I've had those feelings. The thing is, it's easier to see in other people than it is to see in yourself. And I remember a time in my life that I had those feelings. Now, let me give you a little context to the story so you'll know this isn't as easy to get rid of, to reorient it around, as maybe you think. I had been to college to train as a pastor. I had served in the church since I was 15. I abandoned everything that I knew to follow God's call on my life. I did my bachelor's degree in ministry. I had served in three different churches full-time as a pastor. And I had been in ministry about 15 years, okay? So quite a bit, or maybe a little less, maybe 12 or 13 years. I had walked with the Lord and sacrificed for the Lord and followed the Lord and tried to obey the Lord a lot. But here's what happens. When you and I are squeezed, what we really believe comes out. When the pressure mashes in on our life, our real theology and our real philosophies came out, and it came out in me. I had some works-based theology inside me that I didn't know was there. I thought, I've walked with the Lord. I've been trained. I've been educated. I know about theology. I shouldn't have any more of this. But my 5-year-old son got type 1 diabetes. And he was hospitalized. And as I went to visit him in the hospital, it overwhelmed my soul. Because I saw my little boy in a hospital when he should be outside playing with all the other kids. And I looked at him and I said, what did he do wrong? He's a child. How does he deserve this? And it hurt my soul. And I can't tell you the impact on me and our family over the next several years as we begin to walk out the care of that disease. And I can't tell you how big of a failure that I felt like, because I saw my son suffering and I couldn't do anything about it. And it made me mad at God. I was angry with God. And I was like, come on, God. Just cut me some slack on this one. I haven't asked you for a lot. I mean, I've abandoned everything that I knew. I've lived a pretty sacrificial life. We're not perfect, but we've tried to obey you on the big things. I think we've mostly obeyed you. Come on, come on, God. Just give us a break. Like, we're ready to sacrifice more. We're ready to do more for you. But somehow help us through this issue. We've served you with our whole heart, as best as we know. Have you ever felt that way? That you did your part, but God didn't do his part? I did. That's how I felt. As a pastor, that's how I felt. God, I'm a pastor. Like, I'm not even out trying to follow my own ambitions in life. I'm trying to serve people. God, do your part. Now, If you read between the lines, sometimes people say things like this. Why? They look at a person who's faithful or whatever and they say, how could God allow something like that to happen to someone who's serving God? Right? Have you ever thought that? And then the next question usually becomes, well, then why serve God? If that's how God allows the people who serve him to be treated, then why serve him at all? Shouldn't he prevent things like that? Now, I want to share with you one of the hardest truths that I've ever learned. And I had to learn it because I didn't know it. And I probably am still learning it. And here it is. When we think the way to get God's grace is by serving him, we are really serving ourselves. When we think the way to get God's grace is by serving him, we are really serving ourselves. Now, I'm not saying that all our motives are bad. I'm just saying that, are there good motives? Yes. Did I want to do good things? Yes. Was I doing it for the right reason? Yes, sometimes. But it's not that simple. There were other mixed motives. There were expectations. There were assumptions that I didn't even know were floating around in there. But here's the good news that I want to share with you today. Grace is bigger than all of that. And here's what I learned about grace. Grace is not about earning God's favor. It's about receiving the work that God has already done for you. It's finished. It's complete. It's done. You can't earn it. You can't deserve it, but you can receive it. All right, let's go back out in the yard and let's see what the older brother has to say now. He says, I've been slaving for you all these years, and he's not done complaining, never disobeyed your orders. Number two, grace is deeper than your worst failure. You know, the younger brother, he had all these sins and failures, and he was already accepted the fact that I've blown it so bad, I'll never be included in the family again. I'll never be part of the family again. I'll live in shame for the rest of my life. And here's what's interesting about this, though. Both brothers actually believe the same thing. They believe that the way to get grace is to keep the rules. It's just the older brother was better at it than the younger brother. And so the older brother's like, yeah, I should have everything because I kept the rules. The younger brother's like, yeah, I can't have anything now because I didn't keep the rules. But they both had the same earn it kind of theology. Here's the problem with that theology. The older brother kept the rules. He kept all the rules, and he kept a good ledger on all the things he had done right, but he missed the party. He missed the party. I don't want to miss the party. That's what happened to him. When you live a works-based, earn-it life, you miss the party. Now, the religious leaders were professionals at keeping the rules. They were so good at keeping the rules, they actually made up a bunch more rules that Jesus never even gave them. And their theory was, if these are the rules that Jesus gave us, we're going to add all these rules, so we'll live so far away from breaking the actual rules by fulfilling all these other rules that we'll never break a real rule. And what they created is religious legalism. And they put a weight on people that Jesus said they could not carry. And when people didn't follow all the rules that they made up to keep the real rules, do you know how they reacted? With rejection and shame and criticism. Now, let's stop right there for a minute. Because some of you watching online and some of you in the room this morning, you had parents like that. What do I mean? I call it conditional love. You had parents who loved you conditionally. In other words, they may have never said it, but this is how it worked. You go make good grades. You stay out of trouble. You do the right thing. You do the things that make me happy, and I will reward you by loving you. And what does that do to your soul? It makes you then think about God that way. If I'm at church every week, if I tithe, if I read my Bible every day, if I pray, if something went wrong, I must have failed God somewhere, and that caused this. It creates a legalism and a works-based life that will crush your soul. And here's the thing. Some of you worked yourself to death trying to make your parents happy, and it never worked. you never could earn the love that you hoped. Or if you earned it, it was temporary and it always went away because tomorrow you had to get up and start all over again. A lot of high capacity people, a lot of high performance people are caught in this trap, trying to earn, watch this, someone's love who should have given it to you. But you were forced to earn it, and so that's how it looks to you. Here's what I also realize, that that's how a lot of relationships work. Did you know that? A lot of marriages work that way, and a lot of friendships work that way. You did this for me, I'll do this for you. You treated me like this, I'll treat you like this. You were mean to me, I'll be mean to you. You were nice to me, I'll be nice to you. What is that? That's works. That's not grace. I mean, you showed me the cold shoulder, I'll show you the cold shoulder. And it's one for another, always measuring, always keeping score, always, you'll get back what you give, you'll get back what you give. That's a work. That's works-based relationships, and you see, it affects everything that we do. Rather than being grace-driven and having a grace-based life. So here's what I learned about grace. Grace is not about following the rules. It is about abiding with the Father. See, grace is not, love is not a reward to be earned. Grace is a love to be received. So here's the good news. You don't have to fear the things that you've done in your past because the promise of God's grace is greater than your past. All right, now there's one more complaint from the older brother. And here it is, Luke 15:29. I've slaved for you all these years. I never disobeyed your orders. And here it is. And you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. Here's the third thing that we learn that Jesus was teaching us through this parable about grace. Grace is greater than what is fair. How many of you have a younger baby brother or sister? How many of you have like a baby brother? Lift your hand up, let me see it. Yeah, in the balcony. How many of you have a lot of us. How many of you are 100% certain and know for a fact that they got away with murder? Right? You're certain they were treated different than you were. It's 100% certain, right? Of course, yeah. And it's no surprise, you're like, they got away with murder all their life. I would never get away with that. You know, parents would squash me if I did something like that. So it's no surprise when we see this story that the older brother's the one that followed the rules and the younger brother's the one that went and blew the ears. He's been blowing everything his whole life, right? And so look, let me give you a tip. If you're a parent or you have little ones, let me give you a tip, okay? You're going to hear cries about fairness. Just hold on until they leave home, right? And when they come back for Christmas, they're going to do it again. And so we learned in our house, we had two kids, we learned in our house to do something I call cut and pick. Here's how it works. There's one candy bar left in the house. You hand one of them a butter knife and you say, you cut and you pick. You know what that means? You cut the bar in half. You pick which one you want. And look, they will pull up a telescope and they will zero in on that candy bar. And if one crumb goes one way or another, they'll parcel it in half and, you know, nudge it each way. Trust me, you don't have to worry about it being cut right. It'll be cut right. You cut and you pick. Well, the older brother reveals his heart in this last complaint. He always wanted a party, but there was no time for partying because he was too busy slaving away, earning God's grace and earning God's favor and following all the rules and living a joyless faithfulness. But the Father, look, we haven't even heard the Father yet. The Father has said nothing. He's just listened. But now we hear from the Father. And what does the Father say? In shock, verse 31, he says, my son. He doesn't rebuke him. He says, what are you talking about? You are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and now he's found. Let me tell you what happens when we misunderstand grace. Let me tell you, it causes a terrible condition. And you know what the condition is? Blindness. When you misunderstand grace, it blinds you to all the good things God has done in your life. You can't see them because you're focused on what's happening with somebody else. You're too worried about what they got and what they got away with and what they did and what's going on with them. And it blinds you to the gifts. What did the older brother have? He had everything the father owned, but he couldn't see it. He could have had a party anytime he wanted, but he couldn't see it. He got his brother back, who they thought was dead, but he couldn't see it. Because works-based living will blind you to the gifts of God. You won't even see them, even though they're right in front of you. He couldn't see any of it. You know why? Because life was not fair. And when you live with the belief that life is not fair and you build your soul around that, you will always miss the gifts of God. Well, I've got a question for you. Are there any gifts that God has put into your life that you cannot see because you're focused on what somebody else is doing? Social media is very good at making us focused on what other people are doing. And it blinds us to the gifts that God has put right in front of us. Are you missing any of the gifts that God has given you because you're focusing on what somebody else is doing? Well, just to put it out there, grace is not fair. Grace is greater than fairness. How? Grace is the greatest scandal the world has ever known. We get reminded regularly through the media of all the people and the institutions and the corruption and the failure and the scandals and all this. Can I tell you, none of them can hold a candle to the scandal of grace. It is the most scandalous thing the world has ever seen. There are people walking around in the world, walking in grace, who have no business walking in grace. They've done horrible things. They've lived selfishly, and they've been greedy, and they've been deceitful, and they've been immoral, and they've been unfaithful, and they've been arrogant, and they've been prideful and violent and filled with rage and lust and everything else, and they don't deserve grace. They don't deserve to be forgiven. They don't deserve God's love. They don't deserve to even know who God is after all they've done. They don't deserve any of it, and I am one of them. I am one of them. That's what grace is. It takes your eyes off what is fair and it puts your eyes on the gift that God has given you. You know why? You don't want fair. You know, you don't want fair. You know why? Here's what fairness says. You'll get exactly what you deserve. And you know what you and I deserve? To be separated from God both now and forever and all of eternity. That's what we deserve. So we don't want what we deserve. We don't really want life to be fair. Grace is a scandal. It's not a balance sheet. So you don't have to count and you don't have to keep score and you don't have to keep demanding that everything is fair because we have a loving Heavenly Father. So what's the moral to the story? The younger brother left and wasted everything. The older brother stayed and wasted nothing. And they both misunderstood what grace was. One thought the way to God's favor was to gluttonize himself on it. The other one thought the way to God's favor was to earn it. But watch, neither one of them understood what they had in the Father's house. One of them left the Father's house and didn't understand it. The other one stayed on the property and had access to the house anytime he wanted and still didn't understand what he had in the father's house. But here's what's interesting. The younger brother actually figured it out first. Isn't that crazy? And you know why? Because he bankrupted his own soul. And he finally became clear about how much he actually needed God's grace. So here's the last thought. Grace is not about fairness. It's not about knowing. It is about knowing you are deeply loved and personally cared for by your Father. Grace says, no matter what you experience, God's love for you won't change. Let me tell you the greatest truth that I've ever learned about God's love. Are you ready? You won't even have to write it down because you'll remember it. Here it is. He loves you because he loves you. Because he loves you. That's all there is. There is no why. And there is no what if. And there is no but what about. That's all there is. He loves you because he loves you, because he loves you, period. You don't really need to know anymore. Inside that truth is all the truth you need. Grace is not about earning, and it's not about following the rules, and it's not about demanding fairness. Here's what grace is about. Grace is about walking in the unconditional love of God for you. It's for you. Would you stand with me this morning? As our worship team comes, would you just open your heart and rest your heart and your mind for a moment? Lord, today, we just pause.